Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, March 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Fire Marshal, No Burn Ban Yet. Midland, Ector, Upton, Crane Counties Surrounded by Counties with Burn Bans, by Stuart Doreen. Midland County's Fire Marshal says the county isn't at a place where a burn ban will be enacted. Justin Bunch has told the Reporter Telegram that the county will not exact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. KBI is the Keach-Byram Drought Index, and the index is used to determine forest fire potential. The drought index is based on a daily water balance, where a drought factor is balanced with precipitation and soil moisture, assumed to have a maximum storage capacity of 8 inches, and is expressed in hundredths of an inch of soil moisture depletion, according to the Texas Weather Connection website at Texas A&M University. The average as of Monday was 573. The reason Midland County's index score is not high enough is because there is at least one part of the county showing a minimum score of 483. The max score, on the other hand, is 628. The KBDI measurement guide states a score between 600 and 800 is, quote, often associated with more severe drought with increased wildfire occurrence. Intense, deep-burning fires with extreme intensities can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels, unquote. The National Weather Service reports that there has been 1.3 inches of rain since August. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows that conditions in the area that includes Midland-Odessa are the worst on its scale for intensity and impact. The U.S. Monthly Drought Outlook calls for drought conditions to persist. That forecast is consistent with the U.S. Seasonal Drought Outlook. Midland, Ector, Upton, and Crane counties are completely surrounded by counties with burn bans in place. This article is entitled, What to Expect in CUD's Sentencing. Midland flower shop owner faces decision in Capitol riot Wednesday, by Stuart Doreen. The sentencing of Jenny Cudd is expected to take place Wednesday. Cudd is the owner of a Midland flower shop, Becky's Flowers, located on Midland Drive, who pleaded guilty in October to one misdemeanor charge related to her participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building as part of a plea deal with the federal government. During her sentencing, it will be announced whether Cudd will be incarcerated for her actions. That appears to be a main argument by briefs from the U.S. Attorney's Office and her defense attorney. The following are things to know about what to expect. Wasn't she facing more charges? In exchange for the guilty plea, the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed to drop four other charges against her, including a felony obstruction charge. What is Cudd's hope for a sentence? Cudd and her legal team believes the court should consider imposing a sentence other than a sentence of imprisonment. As such, the penalty of a fine is fair and equitable. It is even written in the sentencing memorandum that, quote, the defense seeks sanctions in the form of a dismissal or suspension of penalty for the government's failure to timely produce exculpatory evidence, unquote. Are there other reasons? Reasons for imposing a lighter sentence include new evidence discovered after the guilty plea. Specifically, the vice president-elect was not in the U.S. Capitol or on its grounds. The vice president was not in the Capitol when Ms. Cudd entered. Guidelines call for decrease in the punishment when a defendant clearly demonstrates acceptance of responsibility for the offense, and the main aims of sentencing have been accomplished pre-sentence in this case, specifically rehabilitation and specific deterrence. What is the U.S. Attorney's Office seeking? The government recommends that the court sentence Cudd to 75 days of incarceration, 1 year supervised release, 60 hours of community service, and $500 restitution. Why does the U.S. Attorney's Office seek its sentence? One reason is deterrence. According to the government's sentencing memo, there is a need for the sentence imposed to reflect the seriousness of the offense and promote respect for the law. Deterrence encompasses two goals: general deterrence, or the need to deter crime generally, and specific deterrence, or the need to protect the public from further crimes by this defendant, according to the document. Are there other reasons? The U.S. attorney also states that Cudd has expressed little remorse, celebrated property destroyed, and stated her willingness to do it again. Did Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton get involved? The mayor did write a character reference for Cudd, who also participated in the mayor's race in 2019. Peyton wrote, quote, "Although I believe that the actions of Ms. Cudd on that day were in the best judgment, I firmly believe they do not represent the character that I know of Ms. Cudd," unquote. Peyton wrote that Cudd cares deeply for the country, its veterans, and served citizens in her city, state, and country. "It is my firm belief that Ms. Cudd has suffered enough as a result of the actions on January 6, 2021, and I believe that should suffice," Peyton wrote. Wasn't there another Midlander involved in the riots at the U.S. Capitol? Yes, Eliel Rosa, who was with Cudd during the Capitol riots, was sentenced to 1 year of probation for parading or demonstrating in a Capitol building. The U.S. Attorney's Office stated there are differences between the two. While Cudd and Rosa followed the same route inside the Capitol building, their actions after storming the Capitol differed greatly. On January 9, 2021, just 3 days after the riot, Rosa voluntarily contacted the FBI to admit his conduct. This article is entitled, "We Have a Must-Read If You Care About Education," by Stuart Doreen. The Reporter-Telegram is lucky to have people who want to be involved in the community. Over the years, the Reporter-Telegram has brought leaders in the community to talk about issues taking place inside Midland County and West Texas. One place where I haven't been as successful as I would like to be is the amount of conversation started from those groups in the form of content. Still, they participated and helped make the Reporter-Telegram more community-minded. In the 12 years I have been editor of the Reporter-Telegram, we have been able to provide more articles from leaders and experts weighing in on the issues of the day than we have at any time in the paper's history. Education has been one area where Midland ISD leaders and others have helped create more conversation. Still, I jumped at the chance to have Ronnie Scott, one of the smartest people I know when it comes to education reform, offer his two cents on the state of improving educational outcomes in Midland. His five-part series will appear consecutively on the opinion pages today through Friday and in the viewpoints section in the weekend edition. Scott will address our district's inability to fix schools that are broken, the problem of a divided community when it comes to education, an issue Midland ISD has with facilities, the problem that failure to sustainably improve our entire school system remains the most likely outcome of any of our ideas, determining what to do and doing that well, Number one on that list is teachers, principals, and staff are the important thing. You are not supposed to agree with all or any article, but they will make our readers think about education in Midland. For those who really want to engage in the conversation about educational outcomes, they are a must-read. Enjoy and discuss. This is the education page. This article is entitled, Carver Center Fifth Grader Wins Paper's Spelling Bee, by Stuart Doreen. It took six rounds to turn the 35th annual Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee into a battle between two good friends. Shriya Sivakumar of Carver Center and Shweta Jayakumar of Young Women's Leadership Academy. It took another 16 to determine the champion. But after spelling lovage and de facto, Sivakumar knocked off the defending champion, won the title, and qualified to participate in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. I think this is really exciting, said the fifth grader from Odessa, who spelled 21 of 22 words correctly during the competition. I've always dreamt of going there ever since second grade. As it turned out, Sivakumar is the second member of her family that qualified for the Scripps National Spelling Bee. Her brother, Shijay, won his third ECISD title in February to qualify for his fourth National Spelling Bee. I always wanted to compete in Scripps, but to compete with him is amazing, Shriya said. And I hope that he can maybe win this year. I know I can't because I'm not that good. I think he might be able to. Shijay, who attends Bowie Middle School in Odessa, advanced to the quarterfinals of the Scripps National Spelling Bee last year, as did Jayakumar of Young Women's Leadership Academy. Meet the 35th Annual Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee contestants. Shriya and Swetha put on a clinic when the 38-person field was trimmed to two. They went from round 7 to 19, acing words like jeepney and sacrosanct, forcing bee officials to move to a harder level of words. After both spellers missed words in the 20th round, Sivakumar got lovage, a European plant, Levisticum officinale, of the parsley family, having coarsely toothed compound leaves cultivated in gardens. Then Jayakumar missed pergola, an arbor formed of horizontal trellis work supported on columns or posts over which vines or other plants are trained. That left Sivakumar with a championship word, de facto, in fact, in reality. Sivakumar said afterward she had never heard of the word before, but when the pronouncer used fact in the definition, she had the information she needed. Last year, Sivakumar, then a student at Fasken, finished ninth in the Reporter-Telegram Regional B. Sivakumar's win was the second for Carver Center and ended the run of titles for YWLA spellers at two. Evan Gonzalez of San Jacinto Junior High spelled his first five words correctly before finishing in third. Seven spellers tied for fourth. This is the local from the front page. This article is entitled Planning Zoning OK's Replat in Northwest Midland by Mella McEwen. A residential lot that has been on the market for 20 years in Northwest Midland is on its way to housing two new homes. Planning and Zoning Commissioners, by a vote of 4-2, with one abstention, approved a final plat replatting Lot 12 and the eastern half of Lot 13 at Tanforan Avenue and Rockwood Drive into two separate lots for new residences. The location of the property is northeast of the intersection of Midland Drive and Mockingbird Lane, inside Mockingbird Heights. The request was not without opposition, as several neighbors said they had been assured the lots in that development would not be subdivided, and doing so to build smaller homes would impact property values. They also expressed concerns that the houses would be two-story homes and would infringe on their privacy. Builder Mike Jackson said that lot has been problematic because it is so big. He himself purchased it twice, he said. He assured neighbors the two homes would not be two-story. Commissioner Adrian Carrasco said the vote was about consistency and having that lot developed rather than sitting empty. He also noted that when subdivided, each lot would exceed the minimum width requirement of 80 feet. Commissioners also approved, unanimously, a preliminary residential replat of two lots into one at the northeast corner of Bunch Street and East California Avenue, as requested by property owner Mark D. Colvin. The property was rezoned from MF-22, Multiple Family Dwelling District, to SF-3, Single Family Dwelling District, by the City Council in January. Finally, commissioners unanimously approved a request by Lewis Clay for a zone change from MF-22, Multiple Family Dwelling District, to SF-3, Single Family Dwelling District, in order to build a single-family residence at 311 North Calhoun Street. This article is entitled, Brew Street Plans New Location in Central Midland, by Tim Fisher. Brew Street closed its doors in January of 2022 with plans to relocate closer to the downtown Midland area around Midland High School. According to Brew Street owners, they recently closed on the new property after a two-month delay. Now that the title and paperwork is complete, they plan on starting the renovations and construction to get the kitchen and bakery built out. Owners told the Reporter-Telegram that they bought Marvin Ulmer's old historic home on 111 North C Street across from Hospice of Texas. "We're excited to convert this old gem into Midland's new favorite gathering place, and we're planning to incorporate a lot of the old Midland history into the renovations, including Ulmer's legacy." This article is entitled, Governor Reappoints Batch to State Housing Community Agency, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Governor Greg Abbott has reappointed Midlander Brandon Batch to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs for a term that ends January 31, 2027. At the same time, Abbott appointed Ana Maria Farias of San Antonio to the department. Batch is a business development manager for Ventura Management LLC, an oil and gas company in the Permian Basin which acquires mineral and royalty interests and develops natural resources. He also serves as chairman of the board for ROPE Youth, a Midland-based nonprofit focused on assisting and developing at-risk youth. Batch is also a board member of the Borgen Project, a national organization working to reduce extreme global poverty. Farias is retired and most recently worked as the Assistant Secretary, Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs is responsible for promoting and preserving home ownership, financing the development of affordable rental housing, supporting community and energy assistance programs, and other functions. This is the opinion page. This is a guest editorial entitled, When Will We Decide We Must Fix What We Break? MISD's John Trichetti said it correctly. We have to quit putting ourselves in positions where we have to choose between bad and worse. The latest choice? Spend millions of dollars to keep the Young Women's Leadership Academy, YWLA, at its current location, or close Washington STEM and relocate YWLA to the Washington site. MISD's board reached a logical conclusion. Close Washington and redistribute its student body. Washington, a school of choice, was not being chosen broadly by the community because it was failing to deliver acceptable academic results. Here is the problem. We have not accepted ownership for fixing what we break. If we have created failing schools, then we must own the responsibility to fix them. We need to do so before they hit crisis mode and we are forced to choose between bad and worse. While it makes sense to close Washington and relocate YWLA, it doesn't make sense that we let our only elementary STEM campus reach failing status, then failed to correct it. This is not the first time this has happened. Remember Crockett Elementary? It failed repeatedly to the point we either had to do something drastic or let the state take it over. We had to choose between bad and worse. We closed the school, sent its students away, opened it back up by bussing in new students, and changed its name. Travis Elementary? It failed repeatedly to the point we either had to do something drastic or let the state take it over. We did something drastic. We outsourced its repair to another public school system, IDEA Public Schools. Sam Houston Elementary? We outsourced its repair to Third Future Schools. Now it's Washington's turn. It failed repeatedly to the point that the logical choice was to shut it down, move its students out, and provide the building to yet another third party, YWLA. This is not a criticism of IDEA, Third Future, or YWLA. Each will likely contribute to the success of public education in Midland. What is open to criticism is the continued acceptance of failing campuses. Although we try to fix them, we either lack the perseverance or the ability to see things through, to fix our own problems before they hit crisis mode. We have allowed ourselves to get lost in the noise. School calendars, renaming schools, a Northeast versus a Southside school, bonds, schools of choice, and so on. Important issues, but ultimately noise in the scheme of failing schools and the need for system-wide academic improvement. We allowed several of our schools to break. Until we decide that is unacceptable and that we must fix what we have broken, until we consciously turn down the volume of the noise, until we lay down the axe we each have to grind, we will continue to have to choose between bad and worse. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, March 22nd. Randy Lee Elrod. Randy Lee Elrod, 67, of Midland, passed away on March 15th. Randy was born on March 9, 1955, in Crane, Texas, to A.L. and Earlene Elrod. Randy is survived by his daughters, Christy Lee Bass and Kendra Karen Turner. Randy is preceded in death by his parents, A.L. and Earlene Elrod, and his brother, Roland Elrod. Flower arrangements can be sent to 2533 Spur Avenue, Odessa, 79761. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to St. Jude's. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sherry Lynn Lloyd Parker. Sherry Lynn Lloyd Parker died February 12th. Memorial set for March 26th at Ellis Funeral Home at 2 p.m. Jared Michael Parks. Jared Michael Parks, 18, of Stanton, went to be with our Lord and Savior Wednesday, March 16th. Jared was born September 5th, 2003, in Lubbock, to Jimmy and Kathy Parks. Jared grew up in Stanton. Jared is survived by his dad and mom, Jimmy and Kathy Parks of Stanton, four brothers, Anthony Lopez and family of Stanton, Mercedes Lopez and family of Lubbock, Jeremy Parks and family of Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Robert Parks and wife of Otis Orchards, Washington. Two sisters, Jessica Kennemer and family of Big Spring, Texas, and Lexi Parks of Eunice, New Mexico, as well as nieces, nephews, cousins, uncles, and aunts. Jared is preceded in death by his maternal and paternal grandparents. A public visitation will take place Thursday, March 24th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Big Spring, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Big Spring. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Shirley Bolton. Shirley Bolton, 73, of Midland, passed away March 19th in Midland. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, March 25th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Timotea Gabaldon. Timotea Gabaldon Ortega, age 91, of Midland, passed away March 17th. Viewing will be Monday, March 21st from 3 to 9 p.m. and Tuesday, March 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Tuesday at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Wednesday, March 23rd at 2 p.m. at San Miguel Arcangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery.
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. Odessans speak about Central Texas fires. Over the last 7 days, 178 wildfires in Texas have burned more than 108,000 acres and come uncomfortably close to a handful of former Odessans now living in Central Texas. Kelly Blau, former owner of Odessa Bridles and Formals, lives on a ranch 5 miles south of Gorman. The first fire near her ignited Wednesday night, and since then a handful of other fires have also come to life to form what's being called the Eastland Complex Fires. As of Monday morning, the Eastland Complex Fires have charred more than 54,000 acres and was only 30% contained, said Anna Aaron, a spokeswoman for the Texas A&M Forest Service. The cause of the fires remain under investigation. Once one of the fires got up to the edge of Gorman, Blau said she and her husband Brandon, who have owned their ranch about 6 years, opened up all of their gates so their cattle could get to the greenest parts. We filled up our trucks with keepsakes and got ready to move out, Blau said. We sat up all night Thursday night just watching. Her stepmother and her stepmother's parents, who live next door, did evacuate Thursday night, but have since returned home, Blau said. The winds died down some on Saturday, but by Sunday they had picked up again, Blau said. I think the winds were 20 to 30 miles an hour, but they seemed like 1,000 miles per hour, Blau said. Thankfully, it began to drizzle Monday morning. We're safe now, but it's just been a long weekend waiting and watching. Blau said, I know a lot of people were closer, but it was close enough for me. Aaron, the Forest Service spokeswoman, said 3 new fires popped up Sunday, slowing the firefighters' progress. The precipitation and rainfall over the area is certainly going to be beneficial to making good progress in containing the fires, Aaron said. The firefighters are looking forward to making some progress today. As of Monday morning, just over 400 firefighters from all over Texas and 14 other states were battling the blazes, Aaron said. A news release detailed that firefighters from the Midland Fire Department joined other agencies across Texas as part of the Texas Interstate Fire Mutual Aid System to assist with the fires in and around the Eastland Complex fires. Assistant Odessa Fire Rescue Chief Rod Huber said his department sent a training captain and an engineer to the Eastland Complex fires too. Both are paramedics and took an ambulance with them. They've been helping out with logistics since last Wednesday and are expected to return back sometime this week. It's unknown at this point if they'll need to be replaced, Huber said. Blau said she's been amazed at the response of all the local volunteer firefighters and the community. The departments have received so many donations for water and food, they're at near capacity, she said. Tons of cattle feed have also been donated. What they really need now is help with a high cost of fuel, whether it's through cash donations or gift cards, Blau said. People willing to help can visit Central Texas Fire Relief Farm and Ranch on Facebook for information on how they can help, she said. Odessan Ronnie Lewis spent Sunday night keeping a close eye on ranches owned by his sister, Lori Dawson, and his mother, Alma Bird, 15 miles outside of Brownwood, near Blanket. The Blanket fire has threatened both of their homes, which are located along Highway 1467, also known as the Blanket Highway. The Blanket fire had burned 1,500 acres as of Monday morning and was 5% contained, Aaron said. Roughly 40 firefighters were battling it. According to the Blanket Volunteer Fire Department, it was started by arcing power lines. We were sitting in the house watching TV and visiting with my mom when we got a phone call suggesting they evacuate, Lewis said. When they looked outside, they could see the smoke, but realized a fire was heading away from their ranches, so they decided to stay, Lewis said. We were ready to skedaddle, though. We left the garage door open and we packed up all of my mom's medications, he said. There were people packing up all around us from 5 p.m. until dark. Lewis said he accompanied his brother-in-law, Pat, as Pat joined all of the other nearby ranchers in moving cattle from endangered pastures to safer locations. At one point, a whole group of cattle was herded down the highway. Many of the ranchers didn't know each other well, but everyone was pitching in, he said. It gave us goosebumps watching everyone pitching in, Lewis said. As darkness fell, people warily watched the fire's progression from nearby hills, he said. On Monday morning, Lewis said he couldn't tell if the air was still filled with smoke or if it was fog as a storm front came through. Later in the day, he said a nice rain was coming down. Lewis, too, mentioned the tireless work of the volunteer firefighters. They have been working around the clock for days, Lewis said. Want to help? The May and Blanket Volunteer Fire Departments are accepting donations. May Volunteer Fire Department, P.O. Box 15, May, Texas, 76857. Blanket Volunteer Fire Department, P.O. Box 72, Blanket, Texas, 76432. West Texas Nonprofits launches website, Midland. On Monday afternoon, Midland Shared Spaces hosted a kickoff party to unveil WTX Nonprofits. A kickoff party took place at Second Story Co-working, located at 223 West Wall Street, Suite 200. According to the WTX Nonprofits website, it's a project designed to connect individuals with nonprofits through outreach efforts operating or serving in West Texas. As of Monday afternoon, there were more than 150 nonprofits listed in the WTX Nonprofits directory. MSS Executive Director Autumn Vest spoke with the Odessa American about the importance of keeping the nonprofit list up to date. WTX nonprofits serve 20 counties throughout West Texas, including Andrews, Borden, Brewster, Crane, Jeff Davis, Dawson, Ector, Gaines, Glasscock, Howard, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Presidio, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler. It's a very hands-on project, Vest said. We are trying to reach out to every nonprofit before we list them, so we make sure that we are listing them correctly and that we know that they are operational. The whole goal is to be a living, breathing, viable resource for our community. We don't want a bunch of listings that aren't accurate or nonprofits that are no longer operating or whatever the case may be. We are really being diligent. The official launch of WTX Nonprofits was 3 years in the making. Vess said this is the first of many steps to ensure that WTX Nonprofits continues in the future. She said the next major piece in the success of WTX Nonprofits is marketing. It's not the field of dreams, she said. We can't just launch it and walk away. We have to talk about it. We have to continue to share the information with community members. Vest wants to emphasize WTX Nonprofits is a free tool for people to use when searching for nonprofits throughout West Texas. The directory listing for nonprofits organizations includes its name, address, telephone number, website, and social media accounts. This is an opportunity for some nonprofits who aren't heard of as much or are just getting started, Vest said. It's an opportunity for them to get the same level of recognition as other nonprofits. The listings are fair. They are free. We don't ask for any nonprofit to contribute. We aren't asking for money. It's truly a collaborative regional effort. Quick hits, free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, tests will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Neighborhood Watch Meeting. The Odessa Police Department, 205 North Grant Avenue, has scheduled a Neighborhood Watch Meeting from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at the OPD classroom. The program is designed to keep citizens informed of activity occurring in their neighborhoods by forming watch groups within their neighborhoods. It's a neighbor helping neighbor program that has assisted in reducing crime within the community. This program is an alliance between the citizens of Odessa and law enforcement. Citizens become the extra set of eyes and ears for law enforcement, reporting suspicious activity to police, along with working together to resolve problem areas. For more information, call Corporal Steve LeSueur at 432-335-3361 or Corporal Michael Hamilton at 432-335-3322 or visit tinyurl.com/ABBR8VEP. Cleanup event. The Sandstorm Aggie Moms Club and Keep Odessa Beautiful are teaming up for the big event to spruce up ECISD campuses. They are asking student groups and organizations to volunteer at March 26th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Slater Park Pavilion, located at 1001 West 38th Street. Students will qualify for Texas Scholar Hours. Call Martha Cortazar at the City of Odessa, 432-335-4836, to schedule. Annual West Texas Oil and Gas Show. The 8th Annual West Texas Oil and Gas Show has been scheduled at 9 a.m. Wednesday and Thursday at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. There will be heavy equipment displays, product demos, and a charity cook-off. Visit tinyurl.com/46AWH92V. Linton Midweek Lunch and Service. Faith Fellowship Lutheran Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled Linton Midweek Lunch and Services from noon to 1 p.m. Wednesdays through April 6th. For more information, call 432-362-2549 or email office@faithfellowshipodessa.org. Tip-A-Cop Event, benefit Special Olympics Texas. The Odessa and Midland's Bubba's 33 locations team up with local police to raise money for Special Olympics Texas. Police officers will help serve guests at the Tip a Cop event and collect donations from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday at 3315 West Loop 250 North in Midland and Thursday at 1653 East Highway 191 in Odessa. Visit bubbas33.com. Baby Shark Live, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present the Baby Shark Live at 6 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 5 p.m. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/54T9YTN8. FCC Affordable Connectivity Event. The Federal Communications Commission, Excess Telecom City and County of Andrews, will be providing a 32G tablet with 1 year internet connectivity at 25G to all citizens of Andrews County that qualifies from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday at Andrews Business and Technology, 201 Northwest Avenue D, Andrews. Connection fee is $20. Qualifications: recipient of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP Food Stamp, Medicaid Supplemental Security Income, SSI, Federal Public Housing Assistance, Veterans and Survivor Pensions Benefit, income that is at or below 200% of the federal poverty level of $25,000, students on federal Pell Grant, children who participate in the National School Lunch Program or the School Breakfast Program, including through the USDA Community Eligibility Provision. Title I participates in tribal-specific programs such as Bureau of Indian Affairs General Assistance, Tribal TANF, or Food Distribution Program on Indian Reservations, Elderly on Social Security. Please bring supporting documentation. For more information, call Gloria G. Apollinero at 432-349-0522. National Quilt Month Film Series. The Alan Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled National Quilt Month Film Series at 6 p.m. Thursdays. Thursday, Bisa Butler, Quilt Portrait, G's Bend Quilters. March 31st, Ken Burns Quilt Collection. There will be short videos of famous quilt artists, quilt events, and quilt collections. Admission is free. For more information, visit noelartmuseum.org. Show support. GoFundMe pages have been started, and the University of Southwest has formed a donation site to support the victims and families of last week's tragic accident. The donation site for University of the Southwest is located at tinyurl.com/2p99v3cy. GoFundMe has notified the Odessa American of 7 verified pages for funeral expenses for Carissa Rains, Travis Garcia, Lacey Stone, and Jackson Zine, and medical expenses for Dayton Price and Hayden Underhill, as well as a general fund. The page for Rains is tinyurl.com/YCKSSBEV, while the page for Garcia is tinyurl.com/43397DFE. The page for Stone is tinyurl.com/39KSVDES, while the page for Zen is tinyurl.com/2S3RB9AU. The page for Price is tinyurl.com/8X5FAW45. And the page for Underhill is tinyurl.com/27 NPEF3X. Any Given Tuesday has created a general fund at tinyurl.com/2xhyjzhs. Input wanted for library. The Ector County Library Advisory Board, along with the Ivy Group, is seeking community input on the future of the library and how it can address the needs of the community. On Monday morning, the Ivy Group launched an online survey which will allow community members to give feedback on the current library and what they would like to see in the future. The Ector County Library is a critical part of our community, and the advisory board needs to have as much public input as possible. As we plan for the library's future, we are inviting the whole community to complete the survey, Advisory Chair Randy Hamm said in a news release. The Ivy Group will also be conducting a telephone survey through the month of April and holding two town halls at 6:30 p.m. April 4th and 5th at the Ector County Library. The April 4th town hall is in English, and the April 5th town hall is in Spanish. Online survey at tinyurl.com/3T7S2K4T. OC Promise details on agenda. The Odessa College Promise Initiative, along with the newly announced Falcon Free program at University of Texas Permian Basin, could make college more affordable for students and create more educational attainment in the region, Vice President for Student Services Kim McKay said. When the Odessa College Board of Trustees meets at 6:30 p.m. today, Tuesday, in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, it will hear a presentation on OC Promise from McKay and Vice President for Academic Partnership Jonathan Fuentes. We will most likely share details for a media release and share some of the ways we think students can use this as a pipeline to the new Falcon program, really creating opportunities for baccalaureate degree attainment in the region at little or no cost to our students, McKay said. We also hope that through OC Promise, we're able to increase the college going rate in the region. Falcon Free is part of the University of Texas system, $30 million endowment to expand tuition assistant programs in all of the University of Texas institutions, also known as Promise Plus. Promise Plus provides tuition assistance to eligible students at 7 UT institutions, including UT Arlington, UT Dallas, University of Texas at El Paso, University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, UT San Antonio, and UT Tyler. Falcon Free is a plan that covers the cost of tuition and mandatory fees for students who have limited family resources to pay for college. At UTPB, a March 16th Odessa American article detailed, McKay said the college going rate in the region has stayed right at or around 50% for the last several years. She added that it was similar data to what Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray shared at his recent state. We have a responsibility to change that, and all the innovation and all of the programs that we have our students in the Permian Basin haven't nudged that number. So we're hoping this is something that's going to get us some positive traction and begin to really change the face of education here, McKay said. She noted that OC had started talking about OC Promise in the fall, introducing it to the board for the first time in December. As we learned more about Falcon Free, we felt like it was the perfect pairing for students in our region, and I really do think that's the way Dr. Woodley, UTPB president, and Dr. Williams, OC president, have looked at this, McKay said. She said it's not in competition, but in coordination to make sure they meet the goals set for them by the Texas Higher Standard Education Coordinating Board in the 60 by 30 plan. The goal is to get 60% of the 25 to 34-year-old Texas population to hold a certificate or degree by 2030. McKay said the objective for OC Promise is to make it self-sustaining. The first-year tuition and fees expenses are expected to be a little over $1 million, but we know that the mitigating costs, or the offsets to year one, is just under $600,000. Those include the contact hour funding that we receive for students who enroll in credit-bearing courses from the state of Texas. It also includes what we currently invest in through First Class Free. It includes students who may be bringing prior dual credits to their pathway, so fewer hours to use Promise funds, McKay said. It includes the 5% offset of tuition and fees for students who are part of Odessa College Select. It includes 5 scholarships that are currently in the Positively OC Presidential Scholarship. We made the decision to allocate 5 Promise students with Positively OC Presidential Scholarships, she added. It includes reallocating our student success campaign that we do annually with employees to the Promise program. It also includes a board-approved policy update that allocates 10% of the total surplus of the unrestricted net position to OC Promise, and we estimate that to be using averages over $300,000 a year, McKay said. She added that it was interesting to note that there were already several initiatives aimed at making college affordable for OC students, and then making some adjustments in our business practices makes it even more of an affordable program. It made complete sense to do this for our students and for our community. To be eligible, students have to be first-time full-time students in the class of 2024. It will be open to GED and homeschool students that must be between the ages of 17 and 19. There are no income or high school GPA requirements, McKay said. They do have to enroll full-time in an associate degree or workforce pathway, and then to maintain eligibility, our goal is to have them complete within 2 to 3 years, because that's the data that will actually nudge our graduation rate, our national graduation rate. So to maintain eligibility, once the scholarship is awarded, they have to maintain at least 12 credit hours with satisfactory academic progress, and for us, that's a 2.0. McKay said this could be a way to recruit students that may not have considered college as part of their future. But another thing that I think will probably increase enrollment all over the state is the mandate for all graduating seniors to complete their FAFSA. So many students leave money on the table because they don't complete what is a difficult process and application, but I think that we'll see an increase in the amount of Pell Grant eligible students and the amount of Pell awards in our region just because of the mandate, she said. The high school class of 2021 left an estimated $3.75 billion in Pell Grants on the table by not completing the free application for federal student aid, FAFSA. According to a new National College Attainment Network analysis, there also is funding through the state for reskilling and upskilling and COVID-related money. Although we have created a path to promise for the class of 2024, we're committed to finding ways to make education affordable for students as early as the class of 2022. In addition to First Class Free, leveraging some of those coordinating board reskilling opportunities for students to upskill or reskill into high-wage, high-demand careers or find a path to transfer. We'll continue to connect students to resources that are promising, like before we go full-fledged in 2024. Our goal is to create a self-sustaining endowment. That information was shared with the board at the board meeting in January, and I think it's a $60 million endowment over the 10 years to create a self-sustaining program, McKay said. Aggravated sexual assault trial begins. jurors who will determine the fate of a 65-year-old man accused of raping a small child over 3 years watched portions of a forensic interview with the child on the first day of his trial in Ector County District Court Monday. Gary Landreth is charged with 4 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child, 1 count each of sex abuse of child continuous, human trafficking, and injury to a child. At the start of Monday's trial, Assistant District Attorney Courtney Williams told jurors Landreth and the child's mother were arrested after the little girl told a forensic interviewer she was sexually abused by Landreth and a physical exam confirmed she'd been abused. Williams also told them the evidence will show Landreth provided money to the child's mother so he could have access to the child. Assistant District Attorney Ricky Ernest said the indictment to juries indicating the abuse took place from August 2016 through January 2019. Sylvia Afedi, a former forensic interviewer with Harmony House Child Advocacy Center, was the state's first witness. She told jurors forensic interviewers are trained to ask potential victims open-ended, non-suggestive questions and to try to get children to describe in their own words what they experienced. When she met the victim in January 2019, the girl was 5 years old, but clearly knew the difference between the truth and a lie, Afedi said. Over the course of their interview, the girl told her verbally and using pictures exactly how Gary touched her and had her touch him in her mother's bedroom, Afedi said. She also used her hands and mouth. The girl used the words bad and hurt to describe how the acts felt, the forensic interviewer told jurors. Throughout her time at the center, Afedi said the girl engaged in highly sexual behaviors, sometimes without being asked questions about Landreth's actions, and even when she was out of the interview room. A normal 5-year-old would not engage in such behaviors, Afedi said, prior to Williams showing the jurors clips of the behavior. Under cross-examination by defense attorney Michael McLeish, who waived his opening statement, Afedi testified she doesn't know what the living conditions were at the girl's home. The girl did tell her, however, that the bathroom and sink weren't working and she'd had lice. Judge Dan Wallen of the 70th District Court is presiding over the trial. Last week, the girl's mother, Shirley Harmon, 40, pleaded guilty to abandonment and endangerment and was sentenced to the maximum term allowed under her plea agreement, 20 years in prison. She's still facing trial on 1 count each of continuous sexual assault and human trafficking. Harmon is on the state's list of potential witnesses.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.